I'm going to try to embarrass Susie properly before we ask her to tell us her story. Susie is from Hanford. She has a sobriety date of August 12th, 2018. That makes her just a little over 2 years sober. And she has been, in those 2 years, she has been a regular part of the service structure in AA. She's been active with Tuffy Paw as well as the Tuffy Paw group. By the way, Tuffy Paw is the Tulare United Fresno Young Peoples of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the reason that's important is that that cast of characters put a lot of work into a bid, and they are going to bring the All-California Conference of Young Peoples of AA to the Visalia Fresno area in spring of next year. So Susie's been part of a really dedicated team of folks that made that happen. She is also our Supreme Allied Commander for our noon meeting. She coordinates all of the different Monday through Friday meetings, and if you haven't joined us at a noon meeting yet, you should really dial in. There's some great stuff that happens there, and Susie's a big part of that too. So Jim did tell me that Susie has a Bible verse that has been instrumental for her staying sober. It comes from again, AA is not pitching Bibles here, but this is something that's been important to her. It's out of the book 1 Peter, and it goes something like this. Be alert and of sober mind. Your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. Resist him, standing firm in the faith. Those are some powerful words. So with that, help me please offer a very warm Valley Group welcome to Miss Susie B. of Hanford.
Hi, everyone. Susie Alcoholic. It's such a blessing to be here with you guys. Thank you so much, Bill and Tammy, for reaching out to me and asking me to be of service. You know, being in this family of AA is wonderful because now I know I'm not crazy. You know, I have people that understand me and that are there for me, and you know, there's no critics. It's all love, you know, and I'm able to handle it like a big girl now. Before, I couldn't accept any criticism. Anything that was said to me, I took it the wrong way, you know, and now my heart has opened up a lot because of this program. My sobriety date is August 12, 2018. I have a sponsor and I'm working the steps. Thank God for the steps. Thank God for Bill. And, you know, the creation of these steps are just so awakening to people's souls and especially mine. You know, these steps can be applied in so many areas of our lives, and I'm seeing it. I'm seeing the fruition, the things, the promises that are being revealed in my life. It takes work. You know, it really does. It's not going to be answered right away. So that I can't say. Prior to August 12 of 2018, you know, there's a story behind me. I had been drinking for years. I grew up in a home of an alcoholic home. My father's a alcoholic. I still think he still drinks in the closet, you know, hides it. My parents are in their 70s. They had me pretty late in life. But I grew up around it, and I really feel like it was in my DNA to be an alcoholic. Somebody had to inherit the trait in the family, and I was the lucky one to do that, right? Not only did I inherit that, I inherited a lot of other things that I'm finding out through the program. But like I said, it's working the steps. I drank a lot, you know, like any other teenager did, I'm sure. I started drinking when I was 13 years old, and I remember it clearly. that first drink, I'll never forget that feeling. It wasn't just one drink. I drank two 40 Mickey's malt beer. So this girl was trying to do it big, you know, first time drinking, and I didn't know what I was doing. I was babysitting my brother's kids, and I had been around, you know, in the neighborhood. I grew up in a very humble roots, you know, in the hood, so to speak, you know, and I've seen it all, you know, I've seen it all, really, but I stayed away from things because I wanted to be a good girl. But yet, it was calling me. The chaos around me it just seemed so thrilling, you know. So I ended up dating someone who was in a gang. And that got me exposed to a lot of things, you know, to guns, to people that were up to no good, drugs. And for me, drinking was my thing. It always was, you know. I experimented with drugs, but it was always about drinking with me. So the very first time that I got drunk was like that trigger, you know, I have to have more of it. It just did something to my brain. I don't know what it was. It made me feel so good. Aside from the fact that I think it was in the winter and it made me warm, it really just did something else to me. It provided this confidence that I didn't have, you know, as a teenager, growing up in that home of kind of chaos, destruction, and being an only child. I wasn't an only child. I was a lonely child. My siblings were a lot older than me. They were out of the home. So it was just me and my parents. So I always felt alone. I felt like, you know, I wasn't understood. I felt really misunderstood. And that was my way of coping with life, was drinking. Once I had those two beers, I started drinking more. I think I was actually 14 years old when I decided to get really drunk. It was a rec center, because like any youth that has a rec center nearby, that's where I used to hang out with my friends, you know, and after school, and we would do a lot of mischievous things, you know. I was doing good things, I would say, but on the side, I was, you know, hiding and doing other things that I wasn't supposed to. We went to a field trip of some sort. And after the field trip, I ended up, you know, staying behind, and I got really drunk. We got access to some hard liquor this time, and I completely blacked out, and I don't remember anything at all. And that was my very first encounter with a blackout. And I woke up the next day filled with puke all over me, my hair, everything, and this embarrassment of not knowing what had happened, you know, and coming to find out that I had alcohol poisoning, that I, you know, had made a fool of myself, my neighbors, the ambulance, the whole scene, you know, that you, the whole scene. And, you know, I thought it was so cool. You know, that thought that goes through a 14-year-old's mind, you know, like, how cool is that? I'm awesome, you know, for surviving that. I, you know, and you would have thought, you know, I would have then. But no, that, you know, my drinking experiences increased, you know. I got a DUI. I ended up getting a DUI after I graduated from high school. I was completely lost, you know, during my high school years. I remember filling up my water bottles with alcohol, going to class, you know, sitting there like, I hope no one notices, you know, popping gum and drinking in class and barely making it, you know. Looking back to my graduation, I was so proud of myself, and that was the very first time that I realized, like, I can actually do good things, you know. I don't need to be a complete screw up in life. I can do good things. Somehow I graduated, you know. I had counselors trying to reach out and help me and get me through. But, you know, I just was lost. I didn't have any sense of mentorship. I didn't have any guidance, you know. God bless my parents. They did what they could, and I understand that now. You know, I had a lot of resentment, and unexpressed grief and anger and fear that I felt because of experiences in life, you know. But working the steps, I've been able to release that. You know, really have, especially in my step four, and I'll get to that a little bit. So the DUI was a big thing for me. You know, it wasn't just my vehicle that I wrecked. It was my parents' vehicle, like a cool kid driving their parents' vehicle when they're out of town, right? I took up with it, and I went to a party, got completely blacked out drunk. Was driving over a freeway. I don't even know how, by the, you know, the grace of God, I made it. You know, I'm alive today to tell my story. A lot of it was a blur because I was arrested and I was 19 years old. So that resulted in my driver's license getting taken away from me. That resulted in a lot of things. So getting into a lot of trouble for that. Then like 2 years later, I said, I'm going to stop drinking. So how many of us haven't said that, right? Maybe I need to stop drinking. I've had issues, you know, a few little things here and there. So that happened to me, where I decided I'm going to stop drinking. I need to get my life together. I'm almost getting to 21. I'm almost going to be 21. I got to be an adult now, you know? I've done my partying already. I'm good. So I hang out with the same people. I'm not changing anything, you know, still hanging out with the same people, still going to the same places, still being around the chaos, you know, but I was holding back and not participating, but I was still presently involved in all of it. And I think that's where it really just got to me. And I ended up driving for someone that was completely drunk. I was sober. I was the only sober person out of the group. And I didn't have a license because it got taken away with my DUI. So what ended up happening was I got pulled over. Of course I got pulled over, right? I had to go to court. I got an ankle bracelet for that. Oh my God. I had to lie. Let me just put it like this. I still lived at home. So I felt like I had to lie on top of a lie on top of a lie. And that was the constant thing for me. You know, I never took ownership for any mistakes, especially when it dealt with alcohol. I always wanted to blame everyone else. Everyone. My parents, my friends, shoot, the neighbor, whoever, right? I never wanted to see what I did that got me there until now. And taking ownership now has really given me a sense of relief and knowing how to forgive myself for my mistakes, first of all. Because I was carrying a lot of weight on myself from those things that I did. And I found a new sense of humility, you know, through this journey. And I know a lot of people we've discussed humility before and how we thought of it as, you know, contradicting. People think it's humiliation. Well, humiliation for me was everything that I went through, that I put myself through. That was humiliation, but I didn't know. You know, I didn't know any better, especially during my teenage years. You know, I never accepted I needed help. Because I didn't, because I wasn't an alcoholic in my mind until years down the road. So I ran away, not literally, but I decided to make a big major change in my life because I knew alcohol was just a big, big part of my life, you know, seeing it at home, participating, waiting for that weekend to come, living paycheck to paycheck so I can go party, go clubbing, be in the scene. You know, it was all about living the good life, having a good time for me. Because that's how I viewed alcohol, you know, as a glamorized thing. I didn't look at it as a depressant. I didn't look at it so much as I'm drinking because I'm, you know, sad or upset. I looked at it more as it gives me a happy dose, you know, and thinking that way was to justify my drink throughout all the years that I was participating in it. You know, I left home, I decided to join the military, and I said, I have to do something different with my life. I had this yearning for to live a purposeful life. You know, I've always had this yearning of wanting to do something bigger than myself, and I didn't know what it was. You know, so to me, I, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning, like a freaking person that, you know, smokes a little something and drinks a little something in the middle of the night with insomnia, is praying, believe it or not, I still believed in a God, you know, praying like, God, give me the answers. What do you want me to do with my life? So then I see a commercial of the Navy. So I thought that was it. I'm going to go to the Navy. So I decided to join the military, and I went, and I, you know, I'm thinking, I'm a big girl, I'm going to do big things, right? Leaving the past in the past, all the wreckage is in the back, right? Little did I know that the military was really going to expose me even more to it, more temptation on drinking. And not only did I find that, but now there was a different piece to it. I'm a minority, you know, it's a man's world here, you know, so as a woman, I felt intimidated in this environment, and which I never felt like that before, but something about being in this environment, I felt like I have to keep up, you know, the times that, so I was in the military for 12 years, and for those 12 years, it was constant drinking for me. You know, I tried to remain a professional and balancing things. I tried to change my drinks like a lot of people do, like it says on the book. You know, I used to be a hardcore drinker when I was younger, and then it started changing into more of a wine drinker towards the end of my drinking. And then to really not drinking much in social events, because that's really what it was for me towards the end, was just a social event type of drinker. But in the course of all of that, I did a lot of incomprehensible, demoralized behavior. You know, so here I am, I'm leaving home because I did a lot of wreckage. I, you know, was involved in relationships or passive encounters with men that, you know, didn't mean anything to me. You know, I did a lot of things that I didn't want to look back to. And then here I am in a new phase in my life, doing the same thing, you know, not changing. So what was it, right? Because I thought it was a change of scene, environment, like what was going on? Well, it was me, you know, it was me. I am an alcoholic and I cannot have a drink because that just triggers something else, you know, it'll lead to something else. So what it ended up leading up to for me was December 7th of 2017, I went to a function in the military and I got completely blacked out drunk. And out of that event came a very serious accusation upon me, which put my career on a hold and on a threat, because I, you know, at that point, I thought I had managed everything, my drinking. I thought I was controlling it. I thought I was, you know, did the right thing. I only drank a little. I was, you know, I only did it socially. So why now, you know? So with that, having to face my career being on the line was a very, very awakening and fearful thing for me, because I didn't realize, you know, I had a problem. So like the military does, they send a lot of the military members when they have a drinking issue to get evaluated. And of course I lied. I think I was going to be honest about it. I'm trying to keep my job. I'm not going to tell anybody anything. You know, no, I downplayed everything. And, you know, then I got an evaluation, like, this girl ain't got no problem. You guys are crazy, right? So 8 months later, so I stopped drinking, because I said, you know, maybe I need to stop drinking, you know, with this thing happening, and, you know, there's legal is getting involved. I could lose my job now. I'm going to stop drinking. So for 8 months, I stopped drinking. And then one night, I go out with a friend, and what happens? I don't know. Maybe everything's fine. I can have a drink. Yeah, just one. Let me have one. So one led to two drinks, right? And I'm driving, and things just didn't go very well with my friend, and I had to end up leaving her home, and I got pulled over. I got pulled over. Now, mind you guys, you know, and I like to say this because I think it's the irony where I had already felt like I needed to stop drinking, like, for a serious, like, I seriously in my soul had thought I need to do something and stop drinking, but I couldn't, clearly, because why did I drink, right? And I'm driving listening to my gospel music, and I get pulled over, you know, and I'm like, what? And I'm like, God, like, I'm listening to godly music right now. Why am I getting pulled over, you know? Like, what's going on, you know? And I only had two drinks. You know, what? And I knew in my soul, like, something told me, you're getting arrested, you're getting booked, they're taking you in for a DUI. And I was like, I just laughed. I laughed because I was like, this is my fate, this is what's going to happen, and I just have to accept it. I cannot drink. And after this, I made a promise, like, to myself and to that God in my life, like, something has to change. I have to change. You know, I have to do something about this. And so I did. I got booked. You know, my car stayed. They took it. They booked me for DUI. I was under the limit. But I still got booked, and, you know, I had to fight it and do all that court stuff. It got dropped to a wet reckless. Some people might look at that like, well, it was a wet reckless, you know, so you were good. I look at it as like, that was God's last chance for me to tell me, like, if you pick up another drink, things are going to get worse, and they will. And so that was my last, I guess, the last drop, right? So I was living in El Centro, California at the time, and I got out of the military, and I decided, you know, go to the reserves instead of staying in the active duty side and go to school, you know, focus on something else, find myself, you know. And in the course of me finding myself, I landed in the AA program. And I did that because I had a friend who was also going through a very similar situation and introduced me to the L'Amour El Anno Club. So that's my home group. I love it there. I love the people there. I'm grateful for the unity that's there. So I walked in, and I, like every person, you know, that first walks into a room, what the heck am I doing here? I am not like these people, you know? And I just started looking at all the differences. I really did. Because in my mind, I was better. Because I had lived, you know, all these things that go through people's minds, you know? And yet, there was a piece inside of me that told me, stick around, listen to the stories. You might find out there's more that you can relate to than you think. And I did, you know, I kept going. And then one day, it was at a meeting that this wonderful woman was there who doesn't really go to those meetings there. But she was there, and something just was really like, I was really wowed by the woman sharing. And after the meeting, I had to stick around and get to know a little bit of her, and I spoke to her, and that woman today is my sponsor. You know, I met with her, and I think she might have been, like, scoping me out, like, is she really going to work the program? I don't know. And I met with her outside of the room, and, you know, the AA room. We met for, like, a coffee and tea one day, and we were talking, and I asked her, hey, will you be willing to sponsor me? And, you know, that wasn't me making that decision. I really think that was God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself, which is acknowledge, which is being honest. You know, step one, being honest with myself that I have a problem with drinking, you know, and I can't do this journey alone. I need people that are going to help me get through this and that can relate to me, you know. And it's not just the alcohol, it's my character defects, you know, that can relate. And so I'm so grateful to this woman today, and that was me taking my step one, you know. It's taking me a while to work the steps. Today I'm in step eight. I'm working in my step eight. But getting to step two was quite interesting for me, because I believed in God. I always did. I didn't grow up with a God at home. So, and seeing the chaos that was going on at home, you know, was God even there? I mean, seriously, if God was there, why didn't he fix it, you know? All those things that go through people's minds, you know, like, so this program, when it deals with step two, I love it because, you know, I know there's a higher power. I don't know what that higher power is, but I truly believe that higher power is working in my favor. I really do. And it's because I see it, you know. I see the transformation, but I have the willingness. You know, I have the willingness to sit still, because right now that's my calling. You know, as an alcoholic, you know, and also as a dependent of an alcoholic, you know, I have these traits where I always had to prove myself. I had to be constantly like an overachiever, you know, and be moving a lot and doing things and prove to others. I mean, I did it a lot with my drinking, right? I had to outdrink people. The same thing was like when it dealt with admitting, like, hey, you know, this to me, a power in my life, like, I can't focus on this achievement and doing all this stuff, like, it's not about me, you know. And I had to really just sit still and let God work in my life, like, this God. It was surrender. That's really what it came down to, surrender. I believed that there's a higher power. Like I said, I don't know what the higher power is. I do practice a religion, but even then I even question that religion. So that's what I like about the program, you know, because I encounter a lot of, walking the program, I get to encounter a lot of different beliefs, and that's what I love, you know. When I got to step three and I had to make the decision to turn my will over to God, that's where I got stuck a lot. I got stuck there a lot because it wasn't just getting through the step work, because I got through the step work, but it's going back and forth in the sense of control, you know, because going back to this whole overachiever thing, going back to like things that I wanted to control and make it my way, you know, when it deals with that, like I have no control. You know, I could walk out of the street right now and something can happen to me, and it's not my doing, you know. So surrendering to God every day is a practice that I have to go through, like, literally every day. So I have to make that decision, like, God, let it be your will, not mine, every day. I don't understand, and I don't need to understand, and that is fine. You know, because that actually removes a lot of the stress in my life, too, because I don't have to worry about it, you know, and I don't have to drink about it either. Like, hey, that's what you want, that's what you want, you know? And but once again, it's the willingness and the surrender that's gotten me there. With step four, you know, made a searching and fearless moral inventory. Yeah, no. I didn't want to get through that one. I don't think no one does, right? Why the heck do I want to look at myself and take a look at my past? And, you know, all those people were wrong. They were the ones that did all the wrong things to me. I didn't do anything, you know, and that was my mindset. So, you know, it took me a while. And those that know me know, like, it literally, and especially my sponsor, it took me a long time to get through my step four and five. And it wasn't because I didn't have the willingness, guys. It was because I, aside from the fact that I allowed, you know, the program to work in my life, I really was sitting there with this anger, an anger of like, why do I need to take ownership and yet everybody else doesn't take ownership for their part? Why? How unfair is this world? You know, how unfair is this program that I got to, you know? But it's not about anyone else. It's about me. It's about my healing, you know? And that's what I'm understanding now. That's what I get, you know? But I wouldn't get that if I didn't actually sit down, put thoughts on that pen and paper, you know, and then sharing it with my sponsor. And, you know, everybody talks about having a spiritual awakening moment. And for me, my spiritual awakening moments have been very gradual, like very small here and there in the meetings. But doing my step five with my sponsor, like getting to that very last step question on step five, in dealing with acceptance, was the most awakening thing for me, because now I know that acceptance is the answer to everything, to all my problems, you know. And I wouldn't know that if I didn't share that with someone else that I can trust, someone that I know has my best interest at heart. You know, I struggled a lot because I didn't have a lot of friendships. I didn't feel like a lot of people were genuine in my life. Maybe I wasn't even genuine myself, you know, because I had all these insecurities, all these things I was hiding and protecting and, you know, sheltering myself, because I didn't want the world to know who I was, you know, and judge me. You know, that was the thing, the big judgment. No one wants to feel judged, you know. And just being able to share those things with her has provided a lot of sense of relief. So I'm grateful for the step work that I've done so far. When I got into my step six and I started looking more into me, you know, and my defects, it was like, let there be light, you know, you're no more in the darkness. Expose yourself. No. I don't want people to know that I'm really a mean person. You know, I don't want people to know that I'm a mind reader, because I think I know it all, you know. So I'm sitting there making a whole list of my character defects. And you know, I've come to accept that some of these defects, they're not so terrible. You know, they do help me be, you know, they come in handy. But some of them, they just make this brain go, you know, because the alcohol's gone. You take alcohol and it's gone. It's no longer the answer, the solution to my problems, right? But then what do? I resort to my character defects, because that's what, you know, that's what keeps me protected. That's what gets me to be able to function, you know, in some cases even justifies me, my irrational behavior, you know, because I'm still a little nutty. That's the truth. And like I said before, I have truly found this newfound meaning to progress, not perfection, because of this step, because of step six, you know. I realized, like, I will never be perfect, and that is fine. You know, as long as I continue to surrender to God to work in my life and remove these defects in my life, then it will be okay. You know, things will get smaller and smaller and smaller until hopefully one day I will not be that raging, crazy bee, you know? I will take things more calmly. I will be slower to anger, you know? And that's what I'm striving for today. I'm so grateful to God that this obsession to drink has been lifted. But it really is because I'm willing to just turn it over to God every day. You know, it's not the answer to my problems, and I know that today. I make a conscious decision on it. You know, I have learned a lot. I'm getting ready to go on to my step 8. Where I thank God, you know, I've heard people burn their step work and then they realize, dang, I gotta go back and rewrite it. Step 8, you need all that stuff because it's like a little circle. It all comes together, you know. Looking at all the relationships that you've had, the harms, that you've done and they've done to you, and, you know, how are you going to make amends? So I'm in the middle of that right now. And I know that, and I trust that I will get through it because I have a sponsor who's very involved in my program. And for anybody who's looking for a sponsor, I mean, really, really be sure to pick someone who's going to be there for you, you know, who you feel comfortable with, expressing yourself, being true to yourself and to them, you know. And that's what I found with my sponsor, because as I'm getting close to making amends with people, it's not going to be an easy step for me to do. You know, I'm grateful that I am sober today and I'm no longer thinking irrationally, and I'm not thinking that everyone else is to blame, because that's where I was before. 2 years ago, I was like, everybody's at fault but me. So I do believe that I'll be able to get through the step smooth, unlike with my step 4, where I was just sitting there in my little pity party, like, why me? You know, and how come nobody else comes and apologizes to me, you know? And I'm sure some people can relate with that step, you know? I think that, I was looking at the big book, and there was this thing, because I'm involved with Akipal, and we were looking for a theme one day, and I came across something that really, really stood out to me, and I want to share that. It's saying, it's in page 359 of the big book. It's a tightrope. Trying to navigate separate worlds was a lonely charade that ended when this gay alcoholic finally landed in AA. And that was me. That was me, like, trying to play two different lives, you know. This is my professional life. It doesn't interfere with my drinking. This is my drinking. I get to party, stand on tables, act a fool, lose my mind, black out a few times, you know. And yet there was still a void in my life. You know, there really was. I one of the biggest things that happened to me while I was in the service, I became a mother. And, you know, that's part of my journey right now is being a mother. And I was a single mother for a while. I'm blessed now. I have a husband, and, you know, we have a family, and we have a home, and I'm going to school full time. I'm working on my bachelor's. Criminology, I'm in service, you know, life seems to be okay, you know, and I'm happy. But, you know, it's not about me, you know. I keep asking God to use me as his vessel. What is it that you have for me to do for others, you know? And this is part of it. My service in sharing my story and the hardship that I went through, where I'm at now, working outside of the program or the meetings with other alcoholics, you know, being in unity with those in the meeting, sharing my story of recovery, like I said, and just the service all together, you know, it all ties up like the triangle says, you know, you got unity, recovery, and service, and all those things really apply in my life a lot today. As I continue to journey life, in working the steps, you know, I know better now. Like, alcohol is not the solution to my problems anymore. You know, I am a grateful alcoholic. I used to think of alcoholics as those that are under the bridges. You know, there's a stigma to alcoholism. And yet, I had an alcoholic father, you know, and I saw his journey growing up. And it's very difficult for people to come to submission in wanting to get help. But once that first step happens, like, there's no looking back for me. You know, there really wasn't. And I'm so glad that I'm not looking back, and I'm just moving forward. I look forward to being of service one day as a sponsor, even though it scares me, because I still don't feel like I'm good enough, you know, or worthy enough. But I know that God puts me in places where He needs me, and today is one of those places, you know, where I get to be vulnerable and share about my life with you guys, and I get to be of service for you guys. So I don't know how much time I have. Monica?
You're right on time, girl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it. That's my story, guys. Thank you guys for listening to me.
Thank you so much, Susie. Can we get a round of applause for Susie?